Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby. Today, I'm joined by Cynthia Handel, who is the Chief Marketing Officer of Samira. So, Cynthia, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yay, I'm excited to be here today. As I told you before, I was a follower. I came across your profile, I think, over a year ago, and I've been following your journey and how you grew Scrappy ABM to become a well-known company in the SaaS and in the space, you know? So I'm excited to be here.
You're far too kind. Yeah, I think the feeling is very, very mutual. So what we're going to dig into today, it's going to be a little bit of a different episode, because as I've started to talk with more people building programs and building teams, I'm seeing a greater emphasis on international teams. And it makes a lot of sense in a remote world. Like, you know, I've got a team member in Buenos Aires, Argentina. It's a time difference. It's the same from a time difference. It's actually a better time difference for me being Eastern to where he's in Argentina than it is from like Eastern to Pacific. So like from a time zone perspective, it's actually awesome. But I'm just starting to see this rise of people trying to think through internet working relationships. And one of the greatest challenges when we think about an account-based marketing program is the alignment component between marketing and sales. And that's typically within the context of like same cultures. So I'm just curious for you, as you've started to really build up more of helping people find international talent, like how do you address some of those alignment components, even from an international and cultural and communication barrier perspective? So Cynthia, as you were talking beforehand, you have an incredible story. So I wanted to start by like, let's hear your story and why you're so passionate about specifically international talent.
So thank you again for having me. Why am I so passionate about international talent is because I am one. My backstory is I was actually born and raised in Honduras. I'm going to be super upfront. I did have the privilege of attending a private school, private bilingual school. I had a lot of opportunities that people in my home country did not because of, you know, my school, the possibilities my parents gave me. But again, most people in Honduras study abroad or they study in private schools and private universities in Honduras, and their parents have a family-owned business and they go back and work to that. So in my case, I didn't have a family-owned business. So I graduated from college, and before even remote work existed, like you wouldn't even think of working for a U.S. company unless you had the possibility of obviously marrying a U.S. citizen, or you had been born in the States because your parents took you to a hospital and you were born in the States, or your parents were a U.S. citizen. So working in the States was not even a possibility. So you would find work through your friends, family, network of friends. You would get into one of the big transnational companies or one of the local companies, and that was your life. That was basically it. So that was my life. 5 years ago, I had worked in real estate for 8 years, commercial real estate. Wow. I traveled a lot around Latin America, the US, Europe, all over the world, looking for brands that would open in the malls that I leased, that the company that I used to work for owned. And it was door-to-door sales because we were leasing spaces in the malls that my ex company owned. So I think that around the year 2015, the word digital nomad started coming up, and you didn't even know what it was. And it was like magical. I remember just thinking about it, people working from a laptop in the beach. And I was like, that's unreal. That's not never going to happen to me. It wasn't even a possibility for me. So I kept working in real estate. I hated my job. I hated everything. Like I was burnt out, especially when you're traveling probably 300 days of the year. That was what my life was about. I basically lived out of a suitcase when, you know, just travel. I barely spent time with my family, but that was the only reality I knew. So 2020, the pandemic happened. And Cynthia, like millions of other people, out there in the world did not have a job. She was let go after 8 years. And I'm sitting there in my room wondering what I'm going to do about my life. I know nothing but real estate. I have no other experience but sales. And I just start thinking that it's sales. It's not real estate. This is sales, but I know what I can do. So I decided that I would find any job, any remote job, because I did have an active LinkedIn, not a very active one. I had like 1,000 followers. And I said, like, I kept seeing people talk about remote work, and I would see job postings on LinkedIn for remote sales jobs. And I'm like, why not? Like, I don't have a job. I have nothing else to do. Like, I need to find something fast. And I started applying to business development roles on LinkedIn. I had no idea what the company was. I had no idea what the roles, what business development rep even meant. Yep. Back then it was like, I don't know, like, what is this? So I applied and I applied. I was very lucky. I got a call back from a company in Boston. They were hiring remote BDRs in Honduras, FYI. They had an office in Honduras. I mean, it was meant to be, and I got an interview. I hadn't been in a job interview for a really long time. I messed up the interview and I thought I wouldn't get the job. Fun fact, English is not my first language. So when you haven't spoken English in your day-to-day and you're only speaking Spanish, it gets weird just because you're not speaking English every day on a day-to-day basis. So I was struggling with words. I was like, oh my God, like, it's not as easy when you're not using English on your day-to-day versus when you're using it day-to-day, when you're talking in Spanish every day. So I messed up the interview and I said, like, I'm just going to move on and try to find something else. Well, guess what? They called me 2 days later and they hired me. They gave me a chance. I got the chance to restart my career, and basically as a BDR. And I said to myself, I'm going to be the best BDR out there. Like, I'm going to take this opportunity. I'm going to grow and I'm going to learn from it. I would spend hours reading books on how to become the best BDR, what it would take a BDR to ramp up. I remember our quota being 40 calls per day. And I just thought, like, how did I become so good in real estate? Well, I remember our manager would say, like, do 20 calls. I was doing 60. That's why I sold more real estate than everybody else. So when my manager told us her quota of cold calls was 40 days, I said, I'm going to do 120. I'm going to do three times as much as everybody just to get ahead of the curve. And I reached quota on my first 30 days. I fulfilled, like, I got to my quota every single day for the next 6 months. And I was promoted to an account executive role 6 months later. I crushed that. I was also promoted to an SDR manager role, and the rest is history. Like, I think that even starting over, getting that chance to start over made a huge difference for me. I wouldn't have found LinkedIn. I wouldn't have grown my follower base. Like, I talk a lot about sales, about how people can start their careers over, about cold calling, about every single experience that I've had. And if I wouldn't have that opportunity to just, you know, restart my career and just do things differently all over again, you and I wouldn't even be talking. So a company took a chance on me. I obviously believed in myself. I took a chance on myself. And now I have over 28,000 followers on LinkedIn. I get companies to reach out to me to sponsor me for content. I get people like you that want me on their podcasts. I've met some of the most amazing people on LinkedIn. It has opened doors. I get job offers. I'm very, very, very grateful. And I don't take any of it for granted. Like, I think, obviously, having a multicultural background helped me a lot. My personality is very extroverted. I make friends easily. I don't have a problem networking with people. I love working remotely. Sometimes I do miss the interactions with people. You know, like, I'm a people person, so I like talking to people. So I miss that sometimes, but it is what it is. I grew myself, my LinkedIn. I'm making a lot more money than most people make in my home country. I now live in Miami, FYI. I'm getting married, long story short. But I had possibilities just because I took a bet on myself, and I believe in myself. And there's a ton of companies out there, not only the company that I work for, Cymera, that are hiring people remotely around the world. And it just opens doors for you. I believe that everybody wants a chance. And the biggest bet you can probably take is on yourself. Like, don't be afraid to restart your career. Don't be afraid to take chances if you're willing to work hard. Most companies that are hiring globally and remotely are willing to take a chance on you. And I mean, there's lots of different spaces that you can get into. It's not only sales, there's marketing jobs, there's customer success job, there's operations roles. Like every single day I get a DM from a different company saying, I want to hire a BDR, I want to hire a head of ops, I want to hire an HR, I want to hire a recruiter. Like there's tons of opportunities out there if you know how to look. And LinkedIn is probably one of the biggest tools, free tools that you're going to have. And it's not just for the SaaS bubble. Like there's tons of companies hiring out there that are not specifically SaaS, that they're in the healthcare space, they're in the recruiting space, they're in aviation spaces. You would be surprised at how many companies are hiring out there that are not just specifically SaaS, and they're hiring remote global talent.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit before kicking off, but I mean, I've started to hire remote global team members. So currently we've got like team members in 3 continents, and as a 9-person team, that's not insignificant. So I'm just curious, as you think about helping people hire international talent, again, one of the greatest challenges is just alignment in general when it comes to any kind of an ABM program. And then the more factors you throw in, typically sometimes the more difficult the program gets to even get launched. So I'm curious for you, as you have helped people hire and train and retain international talent, like what are the core things that people should be thinking through in just the interview process to figure out, all right, am I going to be a good boss for somebody that might be from a different cultural background?
So I think, first of all, one of the first things that I always tell founders or hiring managers is expectations. You need to set expectations on day one on what you expect and what they should expect, so that no surprises happen on day one or day two. Like, they didn't tell me this. I didn't ask this. Why am I not being offered this? Sometimes remember that every country in Latin America has their own labor laws. So when, and this is both if you're a candidate and you're listening to this, and if you're a company and you're also listening to this, you need to be aware of that. Are you going to offer that to them? And if you're not, expectations should be set on day one. Are they going to have US holidays instead of their country's local holidays? Time zones, that's another big one. Like, my recommendation is if it's a sales role, there should be at least no less than a 1 or 2 hour overlap. That's it. If you have somebody that has a 6-hour overlap in sales, it won't work out. Unfortunately, I've seen it so many times. Like, if you need somebody to be calling or doing cold calls on Pacific time and they're 5 hours ahead of you, it won't work out. Like, the time zones is a huge factor on why sometimes people don't work out in roles. PTO, commissions, base salary, expectations, what the job is, training, all of those things need to be done on the company side and need to be asked by candidates before you actually take a role or before you start interviewing candidates. That's the first thing. Another thing is, obviously, when you talk about cultural alignment, and as a candidate, you need to know that when you're looking for a remote job, especially with companies in the US, US policies are different from any Latin American policies. So there's a lot of things that you will not get, but there's a lot of things that you're going to gain back, like work-life balance. That's something that if there is no work-life balance and you obviously see that there's red flags during the interview process, you should definitely stay away from that company. It's not going to work out. So there's things, expectations should be set on day one. Schedule is an important one. PTO, compensation, training, product knowledge, all of those things should obviously be set on what you expect from the candidate and what the candidate should expect from you. If things are murky, if there's no clear responses, red flags, obviously. I think my personal opinion is you should go to maybe 2 or 3 interviews and interview at least 4 to 5 different people to make sure that you're making the right choice. Red flags are people that are unresponsive. Like, if you're trying to get somebody hired through a company or by yourself and they're taking too much to answer, or they're saying, oh, the person's busy, he's going to get back to you in 3 to 4 days, red flag. Like, there's a lot of things that if during the interview process you're having hiccups, it's going to be a problem later on when you hire. Like, a hiring process shouldn't be something complicated where the candidate takes 1 week to respond to an email. It's going to be something bad. Obviously, you should ask for internet connectivity, what type of laptop they have, so that on day one, you don't have any internet issues, or the person doesn't like, oh, I forgot to tell you my laptop doesn't work and I need a new laptop. All of those things should be discussed even before you hire somebody so that there are no surprises on either or end.
Helpful. Yeah, because I mean, was we've been hiring. That was something that we were fortunate enough to go through some sourcing firms that kind of guided us through that process. Yeah, there's a lot of questions I just didn't even know to ask. So I'm also specifically curious because I know with a lot of US companies, they do a 90-day ramp period and, you know, essentially it's just a trial period for both sides. So that is something that I know is fairly simple and easy in the US. I've been working with some international sourcing firms that have shared with me some of the international specific laws between Argentina or Colombia around like employment statuses. So I'm just curious, you already outlined there are some pretty significant nuances and differences. Are there any major ones that if people are considering hiring internationally that you want to go ahead and say, hey, as you think about international hiring as an employer, these are things that are radically different from an employment law perspective that you should be aware of?
So obviously there's a big difference between hiring somebody as a contractor and with an EOR, which is an employer of record. A contractor, basically the person doesn't need a notification to end their job, and you just need a 1 day notification. With a contractor, there is no severance tied to it. Basically it's a contractor role where the person has no benefits unless you obviously want to provide them benefits like paying for healthcare, commissions, et cetera, et cetera. With an employer of record, which mainly comes through a different company like Deal, Oyster, Remote, all of those companies, you are hiring the person through their local entity as if they were an employee for you in that country. That means that they have all of the labor laws applied to them. They get severance, they get local bonuses in Latin America, just so that you know, each country has very different laws around Christmas bonuses. Some countries like Honduras and Costa Rica have several bonuses that are mandatory during the year. So there's a lot of differences, and that really depends on what type of culture do you want to provide your team. If you're okay with like paying every single one, it's okay. People are going to really appreciate it. Or if you want to hire them as a contractor, but you want to provide benefits, like you can get an end of year bonus, or you can get a performance bonus, or you can get local holidays and PTO and this and that. It all depends on the type of culture that you want to run with your team. Because FYI, I work as a contractor, but I have a ton of benefits that my company provides that make me want to keep working as a contractor. Obviously, when I get my green card, everything's going to change. But it depends on how you want to run it. I would suggest that you want to start as a contractor first and just provide people local benefits like PTO, paid time off, holidays, sick days. There's tons of companies that offer international insurance for digital nomads as well. It's not as expensive as some people know. I think you just have to like educate yourself and read more about it, but it's not as difficult as most people think it would be.
That's super helpful. I've been personally going through the journey of finding health insurance for our US-based team, and it's terrible. It's a ton of work.
There's this company called Safety Wing, which applies to digital, well, not for the US team, but it applies for like international workers where they get international insurance.
Very cool. So this is really the last kind of big question would just be, as we think through, again, some of the nuances, and this has become more of a therapy session for me because I've actually not done this super well. We've been in the process of transitioning all of our team members from contractors to W-2, which was big for US-based team members, not a big deal for international team members because they were already contractors. And I had one team member that was international that said, I just kind of feel left out. So I'm curious, how do you help to strike a balance in how you interact with your team and the benefits that you provide? Because especially like I work through our sourcing firms, like technically they're contractors that are placed by the sourcing firm, but their actual employer is a sourcing firm. So I actually feel, I don't know, a little bit handcuffed on what I can and can't do with our contractors that are international. So I'm just curious, like, how do you strike the balance of ensuring that no team member feels like, for lack of like a second class team member, but everyone feels like they're truly a part of the team and get the benefits of being a part of the team?
I would probably create a remote work policy that applies to the entire company. And that would be around PTO, holidays, sick days, end of year bonuses or performance bonuses. And if I have an international team member, probably just try to find them a healthcare plan where they, you know, something that makes sense to you and makes sense to them, to have a different policy based around that, but then have everybody have the same PTO policy, holiday policy, end of year bonus policy, just around that so that they feel comfortable. Because I was once in a company where it felt bad. Like, So there was a US team and it was the Honduran team, and they would go like, this only applies to Americans, not to the contractors. So we would look at the chats and basically be like, why are they even talking about that? Or so you always felt left out, and you don't want to feel left out. Like, everybody should be treated exactly the same. And mainly you would look at the communication. Everything is, this is only for US workers, not for contractors. So it felt off. And I don't know, it was like a division where you would feel different because you were treated differently. So I would just say, like, you know, try to keep the same policy, PDO, and the same benefits. At the end, that company ended up offering the same commission plans for everybody, and everybody was super happy. Obviously, you have, as a candidate and as a contractor, you need to like also like put your feet on the ground and know that you're not a US citizen. There's benefits and there's things that abide to US citizens or the Canadian citizens. So like, you can't ask for benefits that are only for US citizens. But just having a good policy that applies to everybody around commissions, year-end performance bonuses, holidays, vacations, I think would be, you know, encouraged by everybody, especially when you're working remotely. There's a lot of team building activities that you can do just to make the team feel together and want to work together versus just like having the team separated. Some companies even do offsites if it's possible, just to bring in the team one or two times a year so everybody gets to know everybody.
Yeah. We're trying to do that in February, and we're navigating visas, and it's pretty difficult, but we're figuring it out. So Cynthia, thank you so much for joining me today. Are there any other kind of pieces of advice or wisdom that you'd share around just navigating international team member hiring?
I would say, if you're a hiring company, don't be afraid. Like, obviously there's great talent in the US and in North America, but there's also great talent in Europe, Latin America, everywhere. I feel that more and more companies are starting to hire globally just because of the pool of talent is a lot more diverse sometimes, and it's growing. Like, 4 years ago, it was just barely starting, and today all of the big companies are hiring globally or have opened offices globally. I just hope it continues to expand more to provide Latin Americans, you know, bigger chances for them to expand, because unfortunately governments in Latin America don't have a lot of opportunities. So I just hope that more opportunities are created in Latin America for everybody.
Well, again, Cynthia, thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
On LinkedIn, I'm very active. You guys can reach out to me. I'm under Cynthia Handel. I always respond to my LinkedIn DMs. More than happy to like connect with you. And if you just want to have a call with me, I'm always happy to meeting new folks and networking with people.
Awesome. Again, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.